am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Tonight, transcribed, it's the Whistler's strange story, The Big Prison.
To John Emerson, it was more than a nightmare. The sounds, the images flashing across the black background of his mind were too real, too terrifying. At first, nothing was clear to him. But gradually, he seemed to be back in Ketchikan, Alaska, his mind going over and over that first camp meeting with Willard Crofton. Pompous, jovial, boring Willard Crofton. There was the long, tiresome trip to Crofton's lodge. The days, the weeks wasted looking for game that just wasn't there. And always Crofton, with his foolish jokes and his guns, shoving another highball into your hand, and another. And then suddenly in a rush, it all comes back to you, like acid and nitroglycerin. The memory of those last wild moments at the lodge explodes in your mind.
All right, Crofton, all right! I've had enough, you hear me?
I'll see here, Emerson. I picked you up at Ketchikan and brought you here because I thought you'd be good company. But if you think I'm going to pay your passage all the way back to the States...
That's exactly what I think. I've listened to your silly chatter for a month. Now I'm going to get out of Alaska, even if I have...
Oh, that's nonsense. Now, look, John. You've been drinking too much. Your fingerprints will be all over that gun. John, put it down. Put the gun down.
Then it's gone in a red flash. The nightmare, the vision, the spinning, dizzy, sick feeling. You open your eyes and you know it's all real. You discover yourself lying fully clothed on a bed in a hotel room with the morning sun streaming in the window. But before complete panic can overtake you, you're stopped by the sound of voices, real words from real people coming in over the open transom.
I tell you, Joe, the telegram's addressed to Willard Crofton, and, you know, maybe to be sure, I ought to go on out to that hunting lodge of his. If this is the wrong guy...
Look, why make the trip for nothing? He brought his car. Go out and check the registration. Then if it is Crofton, leave the wire with me, and I'll deliver it for you as soon as he wakes up.
You're on your feet now, John, piecing it all together. Weaving dizzily over to the dresser, wincing at what you see in the mirror. Then your eyes drop down and you grow tense at what you see. Greenbacks all over the place. Crofton's wallet, his papers, his railroad and steamer tickets.
Well, it's Crofton's car all right, Joe.
Didn't I tell you? I just leave the rest to me.
Son of a gun. I don't know. The telegram still says deliver personal to Willard Crofton.
Okay, be as fast as you want to. Go on. Make the trip all the way out to the lodge.
You cling to the edge of the dresser as for the first time the full realization hits you. If that messenger goes out to the lodge, you know what he'll find, John. Crofton dead on the floor. And a dozen wide open clues. Pointing straight at you. You begin to think clearly, rapidly. What you need is time. Time to get out of Alaska before the body is discovered. And there's one way to do it. One way that Crofton's lodge might go undisturbed until spring. You tense yourself and take the plunge.
Is someone out there looking for Crofton?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm Crofton. What is it?
Telegram for you, Mr. Crofton. Mark, deliver personal.
Okay, just a minute. Well?
Oh, yeah. Here's your telegram, sir.
We're sorry to disturb you, sir, but we weren't sure you were Crofton.
Who else would I be?
Well, I don't know, sir. It's 8:15, Mr. Crofton. Your train leaves at 9 sharp, you know.
Yeah. Don't worry. I'll be on that train.
just a minute, the Whistler will continue tonight's story. All of us are proud of our hometowns, and rightly so. In this brief moment before we continue with our program, we'd like to offer a salute to one of our hometowns in America, Detroit, Michigan. Detroit is the oldest city of any size west of the Atlantic seaboard, having been founded in 1701, more than a century before Chicago was founded. The French were the first settlers, and they gave the city its name from the French word meaning strait, a narrow passageway between two bodies of water. They referred to the 27-mile-long Detroit River, which connects Lake Erie and Lake St. Clair. The river forms part of the international boundary and marks the only point where Canada lies directly south of United States territory. Because of its strategic location, Detroit was fought over by the British, the French, and the Indians. During the Revolutionary War, it served as headquarters for the British forces in the Northwest. Today, an endless procession of ships passed the city, carrying the immense commerce of the Great Lakes. Detroit ranks fourth in the United States as an exporting port and third as an industrial center. No other city in the world equals Detroit in the manufacturing of automobiles, and it is also a leader in the production of pharmaceuticals, rubber products, varnishes, aeronautic products, apparatus for television, and many other commodities that go to all parts of the world. Detroit, according to the 1950 census, is our fifth largest city, and the people of Detroit are proud of the part that their hometown has taken in the building of America. And now, back to The Whistler.
It's only now that the full force of it hits you. The thing so many men have felt about the North in years gone by. For the guilty, Alaska is a gigantic prison. We're the only real avenue of escape to the South. The railroad to Skagway, the sea lanes beyond, all carefully policed by watchful eyes. You have only one hope now to escape this Alaskan prison before Willard Crofton's body, with all the evidence pointing to you, is discovered. Going back to cover up would be too dangerous. And that means 5 terrible days traveling on Crofton's ticket. 1 by train to Skagway, 4 by boat to Vancouver. 5 days in a trap that may be sprung at any moment. Yes?
Mr. Crofton, the garage man is outside about the car.
Oh, well...
Is it ready?
Ready?
To be put up for the winter.
Oh, yes. Tell him to go ahead.
Good. Your baggage is in the lobby.
Yes, and have it taken to the station window. Oh, here you are.
Thank you.
How long till train time?
Let's see, 30 minutes.
I'm a little tired. Guess I'll wait here till just before the train leaves.
Well... How about some breakfast?
No, I'm afraid that's not much time. We'll have lunch at Bennett anyway. I'll wait till then.
It's up to you. But knowing the White Pass and Yukon Railroad like I do, I'd never leave Whitehorse with an empty stomach.
And somehow, by a miracle, it worked, John. The last-minute dash to the train, the creaky ride to Carcross, then lunch at Bennett, and the dizzy, winding descent to the little village of Skagway, nestled under a glacier at the water's edge. You tell yourself the worst is over. Then there's no reason for anyone to go to Crofton's cabin. No reason why the body won't lie there, undisturbed until spring, 6 long months away. You begin to relax in Skagway as you walk up to the steamship clerk to check your reservation.
Now then, let's see your ticket, sir.
When does the boat leave?
Tonight at 7. Well, Crofton.
Huh?
You remember me, Jim Carroll? I talked to you on the way up. Came in about 3 weeks ago, didn't you?
Yeah, could you?
Sure, you were with another fella. Oh, say, now, wait a minute. I guess it was your pal I talked to.
Yeah, must have been.
See, by the way, where is he?
He decided to stay up there for a while.
Oh, now that's funny. He told me he would be back in the States in a few weeks.
Well, the guy can change his mind, can't he?
Oh, sure.
Fix up the tickets, will you?
Oh, say. I know why he's staying up there, sure.
What do you mean?
Your partner, Mr. Crofton. Didn't he let you know?
My partner?
William. I got a reservation wire here. He's due next Monday on the Nora. Going up to the lodge for a fling at the hunting racket himself.
Oh, that. Well, yeah, he sent me a wire about that. When does he get here?
And Monday. Be up at your lodge by Tuesday night. You think you might change the plans, Mr. Crofton? I could cancel it.
No. One of us has to be on the job. What time do I get down to Vancouver?
Well, leaving tonight, you'll be there Monday around 5 in the afternoon.
That's okay. Fix up the ticket.
Oh, say, that is a funny one, isn't it? You and your partner will pass each other on the way. You'll pass each other. Ships that pass in the night.
Fix up the ticket, will you? I'm sorry. I'm in a hurry. And...
Oh, well, sure, Mr. Carr. I'll fix it for you.
Well, John, it's going to be a race now, isn't it? A grim kind of a race. As you move southward on the Louise to Vancouver and Freedom, as Crofton's partner comes north on the Princess Nora over the same route, bound for that cabin and the awful discovery that awaits him. And if that happens before you reach Vancouver, John, if he arrives while you're still impersonating the dead man, one quick radiogram and it'll be all over. And you, John, the murderer of Willard Crofton, will be apprehended in a matter of minutes on a ship at sea with no escape. Another part of it's over, John. The vessel moves out into Lynn Canal. The lights of Skagway recede into the night. You leave your cabin, manage to have dinner alone, and then slip back out to the deck, find a chair, and lean back to rest for the first time in more than a day. You're tired now, terribly tired, and you're thankful for the darkness and the soothing slap of the water against the sides of the ship. And then...
Well, Mr. Crofton, mind if I sit down?
Why, no, not at all.
That's the Crofton of Crofton Williams, isn't it? I saw your name on the passenger list. Quite a surprise.
Oh?
Yes, I've dealt with you people for some time now. Nearly 15 years.
Well,
I'm Dr. Prentice, Alaska Medical Mission.
Well, it's a real pleasure, Doctor.
Why, I could tell you some stories about the things your medical supplies have done for us up here. Saved a lot of lives, Crofton.
That's fine. Oh, you'd better hurry if you want dinner. That's the last call.
I don't believe I'll eat anything, thanks. Haven't been feeling too well.
Oh? Seasick?
No. Such a cold, I think. Slight temperature. If I took my own advice, I'd be in my stateroom. You going to Vancouver?
Yes, I have to get back. Give my partner a chance for a vacation.
Good. Vacation. That's what I need. You know, I really better turn in. Will you excuse me?
Of course, Doctor. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks. It's a pleasure meeting you at last after doing business all these years. I'll try to make dinner with you, Crofton. That's tomorrow evening.
Fine, Doctor, fine. Good night.
But fortunately, the doctor keeps to his cabin for the next few days. And you're alone now at the rail of the Princess Louise as she flies into the dock at Ketchikan.
Stewart?
Oh, yes, sir.
How long do we tie up here in Ketchikan?
About an hour.
I think I'll go ashore. Stroll around a bit.
Everybody does. Both boat legs.
Yeah. Both?
Yes, sir.
It's the Princess Nora there at the dock.
The Nora?
That's right. She's headed right back where we came from. Anyone on board you know? You got plenty of time to see them.
No. No, there isn't. Anyway, I've changed my mind. I'm going to stay aboard.
The hour in Ketchikan seems like 10 years, John. It's ironic, isn't it? And finally, the tension eases a little. You stand at the stern rail of the Princess Louise and watch the Nora back slowly out of the harbor and steam away toward the north. And then...
Strange, isn't it?
Huh?
Well, watching a boat move away like that, it gives you a lost, empty feeling.
I didn't feel it.
It's like being separated from someone in a crowd. You wonder if you'll ever see them again.
Yes, it is something like that.
And that boat going where this one came from. What's it like here, in Segway, I mean?
Oh? Did you just come aboard?
Mm, yes. This is the farthest north I've been.
Well, it's much the same. Not as many people.
You live there?
No, Vancouver.
Oh, well, Seattle's my hometown. Nice to get back.
Seattle.
You know someone there?
No, I don't. I
come from a large family. We have relatives in Vancouver, too. You know anybody named Lockwood?
Lockwood?
Oh, as I say, I come from a large family. Oh, you're going inside?
Yes. Excuse me, Mr. Wynn, my throat. It's dangerous for me to be out here.
You're trembling inside as you hurry away, aren't you, John? Yes, because it suddenly came home to you. This girl from Seattle. She's someone you know. Someone who knows you. You're thankful for the darkness of the ship's rail. But now, on some pretense, you've got to remain in your stateroom for the next 2 days. Until the boat reaches Vancouver.
Steward, if you don't mind, I'd like my breakfast served here in my stateroom this morning.
You're right, sir. You feeling all right?
It's nothing serious.
If you'd like the ship docked?
No. I tell you, it's not serious. I'm just playing you safe.
Yes, sir. I'll bring you breakfast right away.
Yes?
Your breakfast.
Oh, come in. Put it right there on... Oh, Dr. Prentice. I told the steward it wasn't necessary.
It was my idea, Mr. Crofton.
Dear, Doctor, I'm not seriously ill. There's really no need.
Now, Mr. Crofton, that's what I'm here for. You're just like all the rest of them. Here now, let me take your pulse. Might as well get your temperature, too.
A sense of anger mixes with fear as the doctor stands over you. Above all, you can't have him meddling, telling you to get out on deck. As he turns away for a moment, you remember his first conversation. Something about the touch of cold, a slight temperature. Your eye strikes the pot of hot coffee on the tray right next to your bed. And an idea comes to you that almost makes you laugh out loud. It's so simple, isn't it, John? To take the thermometer from your mouth, dip it for an instant in the coffee, put it back before the doctor turns. And you know in advance what he'll say.
Now, Mr. Crofton, if you'll let me take a look. 102. Mr. Crofton, I'd say you should stay right in bed for a while.
Nothing serious.
Well, I don't think so. However, I'm glad I checked.
I'm sorry I was short with you, Doctor. Don't you worry. I'll stay right here till we die.
Half right. Use USAFI. For example, in preparing military correspondence, would the two words, this data, be correct? No, that's only half right. Brush up on your English. Tell your I&E officer you want to study with the United States Armed Forces Institute, USAFI. It's easy. It's simple. If you don't want to be half right, use USAFI. And now, back to The Whistler.
John, it's almost over. The nightmare from which you've never really awakened. It's a real frightening thing, this delicate schedule you've been forced to follow. Just 12 hours from now, the body of Willard Crofton will be discovered at his hunting lodge near Whitehall. And only moments later, the wires will be crackling with orders for your arrest as the murderer. But that's 12 hours from now, John. And long before that, you'll be off the ship and miles out of Vancouver on your way to a safe hiding place. Yes, John, Alaska was a big prison, but you've escaped. In just a few minutes, you'll walk down the gangplank on schedule, safe and free.
Yes, Stuart, come in. My baggage is... Oh, doctor. Look, it was nice of you to come again, but I told the steward I'm feeling much better.
Uh-huh, he told me. Just the same, I thought I'd better take that temperature of yours again.
But really, doctor, I...
Oh, come now, it'll only take a moment.
But I tell
you... Under the tongue. That's it. I'll shut. Sometimes I think that's the best part of being a doctor. Telling people to keep their mouths shut and making them like it. Oh, gotta get the pulse, too. Mm-hmm. Well, not bad at all. A little rapid, but that could be nerves. All right, let's have a look at this thermometer.
Look, Doc, I was trying to tell you this is all foolishness. I'm feeling fine.
Well,
what's the matter?
Nothing. Quite the contrary. Your temperature's normal again. And I don't mind telling you I'm greatly relieved.
Well, I was...
Relieved?
That's right.
Of course, with no temperature, you're free to go anywhere you like aboard the ship.
Aboard the ship? Wait a minute. What are you getting at?
Well, you really did it with that fever of yours. Made me suspicious, and I checked the number of the other passengers.
Why? What about them?
Too bad, but I'm afraid one of them picked up a case of smallpox somewhere in Alaska. Might have slipped past me if it hadn't been for you. Now we'll all be held in quarantine. Remain on the ship for the next 48 hours.
Now, a question. Do you know the definition of these words? Lobscus, dandy funk, plum duff, and pale ale. Probably not, as these are words which disappeared long ago from the ever-changing vocabulary and mess of our Navy. But in the early days of the Navy, every sailor knew their meaning. Lobscus, for example, was hash concocted of meat, vegetables, and hardtack stewed in heavy grease. Dandy funk was hardtack soaked in water and baked with grease and molasses. Plum duff was a boiled sour pudding with a few raisins in it, and pale ale was nothing but clear fresh water. These are but some of many interesting facts which can be found in the history of your United States Navy.
Featured in tonight's transcribed story were Bill Foreman as the Whistler, Lou Merrill, Mary Lansing, Pat McGeehan, Jack Moyles, Howard McNear, and Vic Terran. This is George Wolfe speaking and reminding you to listen again next week for another strange tale by The Whistler.